Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, November 12th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, I'm in a new podcasting setup here, so hopefully my audio sounds a little bit better. We've had some folks complaining about echoes and stuff. I've been plagued by these issues ever since I moved into my house 4 years ago, and now I've finally tried to do something about it and built like a podcasting closet, basically, where I'm enclosed on all sides by sound dampening stuff. And anyway, we'll see if this sounds better to folks. So we have a lot of news to talk about today, Ryan. So let's start by talking about Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. The trailer came out yesterday, and this is the new title for what they seem to be implying is the last Mission Impossible movie, which I'm not sure I fully buy into that. But what did you make of this trailer, Ryan?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I missed the art of the teaser trailer. This is an excellent teaser trailer. It definitely does sort of that thing of like, this is the end, right? Like, it does that very well, I think. Be it intentional or not, it does seem like, you know, Tom Cruise does look a little older in this trailer, like, because he is, but I think even more than like in Dead Reckoning Part One. And maybe that's just to sort of show like, you know, hey, Ethan's not a young man anymore. I love that like Ethan doesn't talk till the very end of the trailer, and like that line he delivers kind of, it's like almost goosebumps, you know, like it's just. Mm-hmm. This is one of those rare franchises where it really did get better as it went along. Like, I think like Mission Impossible 3 was the real turning point, and then like from Ghost Protocol forward, it was just, and like for me, like Fallout being my favorite of the bunch, you know, how rare is it that the sixth movie is that, you know what I mean? It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. So I think it's cool. It really is the end of, I mean, by that point, it's going to be almost 30 years. You know, when this comes out next year, I mean, that's wild. So I think that for the moment, I'm foregoing my thoughts on the alleged budget for this movie and all of the craziness there, just to be like excited that this is finally happening and that it looks like Cruise and McQuarrie are once again firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think Chris and I had some issues with Dead Reckoning when that came out. We still enjoyed it, but it seemed to have lost a little bit of a step. But man, this is a great, great, great teaser trailer for this movie, and we'll see how it goes in terms of the end of it all type of thing. I saw a rumor today that Cruise wants to keep this franchise going, and he might hand off the reins to Glenn Powell because the two of them worked together on Top Gun Maverick. I have no idea about the veracity of that rumor, but just something to maybe put on people's radar if that ends up coming to fruition. So go ahead.
Is it worth talking about that for just a second? Because does it seem like, because my sense has been that Glenn Powell doesn't want to necessarily get locked down super hard. Like, you know, I think he's being very deliberate about his career choices. And it's interesting to me to think of him, because it's easy to see it, right? Like, I can totally see him being able to fill in shoes like this. But yeah, like the notion of would he want to is interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty explicit about modeling his career after Tom Cruise. So this would be the most literal version of that, like literally taking the baton from Cruise and sliding into the franchise that he created. It would be just a wild turn of events there. But I also would love to see Glenn Powell in a bunch of different types of things. But it might not be the worst thing in the world in modern Hollywood for a guy like that to have a consistent franchise that he could have in his back pocket to return to once every 3 years or whatever. So
I agree with that. Like, as a fan and as someone who loves Glenn Powell, like, I could totally see him. Because I mean, the thing about this as opposed to James Bond is, like, you know, this universe will continue to exist whether or not Ethan Hunt is in it or active or alive. Like, this espionage world, people needing to save the world, like, that still exists, right? So it's mm-hmm. easier than like saying, you know, okay, 007 is dead. You know what I mean? Like, you can easily continue this universe, I think. So I don't want to drone on about that too much, but it is interesting to consider for sure.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see what happens. And man, I'm really excited about this movie now. It's like skyrocketed to the top of my most anticipated of 2025 list, such as it is at this point. So,
man, next year is going to be a ride, man. There's a lot coming next
year. It really is. And speaking of trailers, and another trailer for something that's coming next year, Captain America Brave New World released another trailer. I think this might be the second or third at this point. But we see Harrison Ford as Red Hulk, like full on. They've kind of teased him in previous trailers and spots and things like that. And we get like the full Red Hulk in this trailer. So my feelings about the movie itself have not really changed very much. With this trailer, I kind of still feel like mostly ambivalent about it, but I wonder if you're a little bit more excited about this one than I am.
It's weird because I'm sure, you know, you do this working in the industry where we work in, where you hear things all of the time and you have to try to look at something and like, can you separate the things that you're hearing from what you're seeing? And so what I'm seeing as an MCU fan who is pretty burnt out on a lot of this stuff is the first movie in a long time that I'm like, oh, this looks like, you know, phase two MCU stuff, like, you know, maybe not quite Winter Soldier, but that sort of thing where, you know, it could be like really thrilling and fun and a little more grounded with some of those fantastical elements. And like, you know, look, Harrison Ford's still doing great work. Like if you must replace, you know, Thaddeus Ross, he's a good choice, you know? And so like, there's things about it but you know, they are doing reshoots on this right now. There were set photos recently of Anthony Mackie doing set reshoots right now, 3 months before this thing is supposed to hit theaters. It is hard not to take some of that in and be like, you know, because there have been rumors that it's a bit of a mess behind the scenes. And there have been plenty of rumors about movies that turned out pretty good so I'm trying not to let that color the fact that this actually looks like the first MCU movie in a hot minute that I'm just straight up excited about.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that sounds promising.
Right. Yeah. And it, you know, and again, I like Red Hulk's kind of fun. Like Harrison Ford he's pretty much been honest about like, I don't know, they offered me a thing and I took it, whatever. Like Harrison Ford doesn't really phone it in that often. Like he still shows up, you know? Why not get excited about that? Why not allow yourself to be like, hey, that's fun. You know, that's sort of my view on it. But I like the trailer. Some of the CGI was a little rough, but I also think that that happens a lot with these trailers. And then by the time it hits theaters, it tends to be a bit more polished. So what? And also, look, as a huge Eternals fan, we're finally addressing that celestial in the middle of the ocean. And I think that's fun. In an unlikely movie to do so, which I also think is fun, right? Like that's a bit of a subversion of expectations. You wouldn't expect to address the thing from Eternals in a Captain America movie that's more grounded, but I like that. So trying to keep optimism here, looking forward to it.
Okay, so next up we have one of the most infamous horror movies ever is finally getting a reboot. Why don't you tell me about this one? Because I've actually never seen the original movie in question here.
Okay, that's, well, I'm surprised by that. But yeah, so this is a surprise, but also not when you think about it. So this came out late last week that the folks at Cineverse, who are the backers of the Terrifier franchise, have signed up to bring us a reimagining, as they're billing it, of Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is the infamous 1984 slasher that takes place at Christmas, which with a guy dressed up as Santa killing people. At the time, as you can imagine, that was stirred up some controversy. It ended up getting like 4 sequels, a couple of like loose remakes. It's been like a surprisingly enduring franchise. The reason I care about this is that a man by the name of Mike P. Nelson, who directed 2021's Wrong Turn, is writing and directing this film, which is expected to go into production very soon. And I believe it's being eyed to come out next year. Basically, the people that produced the folks at Bloody Disgusting who produced Terrifier 2, Terrifier 3, they are on board to produce this as well. So no word on casting yet. No word on if it's like a legacy sequel of some kind or how they're sort of doing it. But the gears are in motion. This is like happening and it's happening fast. So That's about the size of it for the moment. But for me, the reason I'm into this is Mike P. Nelson. Like, that is the I am so on board because he's the one doing this. That's me personally.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see his version of Wrong Turn either. So I'm like fully out of the loop on this one. But the question that came up when the news of this broke in our Slash Film Slack is, does a murderous Santa have the same cultural juice now as it did in 1984? Because we just saw, for example, Art the Clown in Terrifier 3 dress up as Santa Claus and slaughter people and do all sorts of crazy things like that. And so you would think that maybe the same company that made that movie might not want to return to that type of iconography immediately, but that's exactly what they're doing. So what do you think about the idea of this movie being sort of in the legacy of that like transgressive boundary pushing type of thing, but like how on earth is this going to be able to break through the noise in 2025 or whenever it comes out?
I mean, look, it's exactly what you said. Terrifier 3, which is an unrated, ultra gory, the least audience friendly thing imaginable, is about to cross 80 million worldwide, possibly today. I even look at something like a Violent Night with David Harbour, which a movie I liked quite a bit. I believe that made somewhere in the $80 million range, globally. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that's close to right. I mean, why not? Can it be as transgressive? Of course not. Is there a way to sort of reinvent what that was? And this is where Mike P. Nelson comes in for me. So Ben, and I'm speaking to you right now, but I am also speaking to the audience broadly. As someone who watched a lot of movies, you know, just sitting at home during the pandemic and wishing I could be seeing these things in theaters, whatever, Wrong Turn is the best movie nobody saw during the pandemic. I think that was the movie that got done the most dirty by the pandemic. That 2021 Wrong Turn movie is so good. Like, for a movie, for a franchise that had spun its wheels through six direct-to-video sequels, and like, you just think, like, what on earth does a new Wrong Turn movie bring us? I cannot believe how good that movie was. And that is all Mike P. Nelson completely reinventing what that thing is. So to me, this is something he's already done and done very well. So like, if they had announced it with a different filmmaker, I'd be a little more ambivalent to the idea. But because it's him and because of what he did previously, I'm so on board with this. Like, and slashers are my thing anyway. Like, I love slashers, but like, so what I'm telling people is, if anyone is dubious about this, if anyone's like, why should I care? I encourage you to seek out that 2021 Wrong Turn movie, watch that, and then, you know, then have a feeling about it, because to me, that's the reason to be into this. So.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So speaking of things like older properties being resurrected, there's a video game series called Mass Effect that is now getting an Amazon Prime Video TV show. And Daniel Casey, who wrote F9, the ninth Fast and Furious movie, is writing the screenplay for it. I think is going to be involved in some sort of executive producer capacity. He's going to be, yeah, the showrunner of the thing. I have not played any of these Mass Effect games. I know you dabble in video games here and there, Ryan. Have you played any Mass Effect stuff before?
No, I've not. And it's one of those things I've always kind of meant to get around to, just because their reputation is so strong. But I haven't looked into it much, but I have like a Steam Deck, which is like a handheld Steam-based console. It's sort of like a handheld gaming PC, and it's kind of a good way to play older games. So I've strongly considered picking these up for that, but I haven't yet. But the one thing I know about it, based on even just seeing like the YouTube video walkthroughs I've seen and stuff like that, is I don't know how this isn't like one of the most expensive things I've ever seen. That's sort of my immediate thought, but I, you know, Amazon's got the money for it, so whatever.
Yeah, they clearly put a lot of money into the Fallout show earlier this year, so they seem to be willing to make these sort of big, expansive sci-fi properties and invest the proper amount of resources into bringing those to life. So we'll see how that comes to pass. I basically just wanted to mention that for folks who might be listening to this who have more of a connection to Mass Effect than I do, in case for whatever reason they haven't heard that news already. Okay, so before we take a break, the other thing I wanted to mention just real quickly is that Warner Brothers is rumored to be working on some sort of other show set in the Batman universe. And this one could conceivably center around Barry Keoghan's Joker character, who appeared very briefly in Matt Reeves' The Batman movie. there's a rumor going around that this may be a Joker-centric spinoff show. Slash Film actually has independent sources that we've heard that line up with that. And interestingly, James Gunn took to, I think it was Threads the other day, and said that it was not true. So I don't know if there's some sort of disconnect between what our sources are hearing and what's actually happening, or if, as I've seen speculated elsewhere, that maybe it's not necessarily a Joker-centric show in the same way that The Penguin was a Penguin-centric show, but that the Joker character is going to show up in this, whatever the show is, and play a major role sort of as a lead-in to the third movie in the Batman trilogy that Matt Reeves wants to direct. So any thoughts on any of this stuff, Ryan?
It's really a matter of how much you want me to go off just speculating, or how much you want me to just say, I think this is a good idea or a bad idea.
I guess because we have so much Star Wars stuff to talk about in the back half of the show, we should try to keep it short, but, give me your short reaction.
As short as I possibly can. I think obviously if Matt Reeves does get to a third Batman film, I think obviously it's going to be Joker as the villain. And people are like, oh, I'm tired of the Joker. Someone pointed this out on Twitter the other day, so I can't take credit for it, but it is true. The last time Batman and Joker actually had an honest-to-God face-off in a live-action movie was 2008. You know, like, so it, by the time the third Batman movie comes around, it would have been 20 years.
Yeah, wow.
You know, so, like, is it really that? No, that's actually, that makes a lot of sense. So, does it also make sense to give Barry Keoghan more screen time as Joker, to, cause he's clearly already exists in this universe, clearly has already had interactions with Bruce Wayne, Batman, whatever, clearly already is in Arkham. Why, how, what? Like, there are questions that should be answered there before that movie comes out. So that makes sense to me. My question would be, what level of disconnect is there between Matt Reeves and what's going on in his corner of the DC universe and what's going on in James Gunn's camp, you know, and like things like that. Maybe that's explains why, you know, maybe these are very early discussions. Maybe, like you said, it's not a strictly Joker show, but, I think him being the villain in the third Batman movie makes a lot of sense. And I think teeing that up in some way makes a lot of sense. So that's what I would say.
All right. Well, we'll see if that actually comes to pass. Have you watched any of The Penguin? I've not seen a single second of that show yet.
I've not, but I've heard it's fantastic. It's just that I've mentioned it on the podcast before. A couple of years ago, I sort of made the choice, just because I don't have all that much free time, that I just decided, unless it's something I must watch, TV is largely not for me anymore. And this is something that has almost tempted me into watching it, because the response has been so effusive, but also, and I can feel the tomatoes hitting me through the screen, I did not love the Batman as much as everybody else did. So, you know, like even though people are saying that about The Penguin, I'm like, is this just another situation where I'm going to disagree with everybody? So I know.
That's why I was curious if you tuned in, because I wondered if it would be able to sort of overcome your, disdain is too strong of a word, your apathy, I guess, toward the Batman. So
apathy is a good word for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a break and then we'll come back. We have a lot more news to talk about.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With Robinhood Gold, you don't need a silver spoon to eat up the financial favors of the 1%. Robinhood Gold allows the resourceful individual to earn the very liberal rate of 4.5% APY on uninvested cash and be rewarded with a handsome 3% retirement boost on an IRA account. Robinhood Gold provides the privileges of a high net worth for any net worth for just $5 a month. The new gold standard is here. Sign up at Robinhood.com/gold. Terms apply. For product-specific disclosures, visit Robinhood.com/gold. Investing involves risk. Rate may change. Gold membership is offered by Robinhood Gold LLC.
All right. So I wanted to, before we get into the big Star Wars news that I'm sure people are waiting for us to talk about, I wanted to mention that Ridley Scott and Paul Mescal are reuniting again. They've word has already come out that they're going to be reuniting for a third Gladiator movie. I don't know exactly when that movie is going to get off the ground. It seems like it's still in the pretty early stages of writing and stuff like that. But the two of them are going to be working together on a movie called The Dog Stars, which is set in a near future where an unnamed pandemic has decimated American society. A civilian pilot lives a lonely life on an abandoned Colorado airbase with his dog and a tough ex-Marine. The two men couldn't be more mismatched, but depend on each other to fend off roaming invaders. When a random transmission beams through the radio of his 1956 Cessna, the voice ignites a hope deep inside the pilot that a better life exists outside their tightly controlled perimeter. Risking everything, he flies past his point of no return and follows its static broken trail. So that's the premise. And this is actually going to be Ridley Scott's next movie. So he is like rolling pretty much straight into this one. And then he's going to be working on that Bee Gees movie that we've talked about before on this podcast. So I was wondering what you think about the idea of these two people reuniting for this project so soon after Gladiator 2, which hasn't even officially come out in wide release in the United States yet.
I will take every Ridley Scott movie I can get until that man is 150. Like, I don't care. Like, if Ridley Scott had a good enough time, as a man who's worked with that many actors over his career, if he feels strongly enough about Paul Mescal to immediately go do something else with him, with all the other projects he has in development, I trust that man's compass. Hell yeah, let's go. That's all I got to say.
So there was a movie that came out in 2020. It kind of got lost in the pandemic shuffle, called Love and Monsters. And I enjoyed it. I think Brad really, really liked it. He talked about it on this podcast. It sounds very similar story-wise to what's going on here, except that movie was about, I guess, probably younger people. And there was like a little bit more of like a romantic angle involved, but the same type of story. And I was wondering if you ever got around to seeing Love and Monsters, Ryan.
Funny, we were just talking about movies that were done dirty by the pandemic, or at least I was anyway. Love and Monsters, another one that, like, oh my God, that movie deserves so much better. Love and Monsters is great. And another example of why Dylan O'Brien should be so much more famous than he is. But Love and Monsters is so good. I cannot recommend enough that you go seek that out.
Okay, well, yeah, if you're intrigued by the premise of The Dog Stars and don't want to wait a year to see a story like that, check out Love and Monsters in the meantime. That's good stuff. Okay, so speaking of Gladiator and Ridley Scott, Denzel Washington, one of the stars of Gladiator 2, is potentially going to be making his Marvel Studios debut in Black Panther 3. He said recently that Ryan Coogler was writing him a part specifically for him for whatever the third Black Panther movie is going to be called. This, as far as I know, this is the first time we've heard that there even is going to be a Black Panther 3. But what do you think about this, Ryan? Because this is obviously a very big deal, Denzel jumping into the Marvel world.
I mean, to address your first point, like, in the same way that they haven't technically announced Doctor Strange 3 yet, like, it's one of those things that, like, of course they're going to do it. So I think there's that first off. But then I think secondly, I think the thing that people are talking about a little less here is that Denzel also kind of said he's got like three or four more things that he's doing and then he's going to retire. And this is one of them. I think like, of course, like, and I think that speaks to the power of Ryan Coogler as a filmmaker, right? Because Denzel's not just going to sign up to do any old thing in the MCU. But Ryan Coogler says, I'm writing you a part, Denzel. That's different. That's the power of having a guy like Ryan Coogler doing work in your universe. So, when you talk about maybe not even just the best actors alive, maybe some of the best to ever do it, Denzel Washington is in that conversation. You put him in any movie on that stage. Like, the thing about Denzel and the thing that I've always appreciated about him, when he is in a bigger movie, when he's in something that could just be like trash, like The Equalizer or whatever, like, he brings it up two or three levels. I think about something like Unstoppable, where he elevates that so beyond what it could have been. So you put him, even if it's a somewhat minor role in Black Panther 3, come on. I mean, like, that immediately, you know. So, I mean, who could possibly look at this and go, oh, I don't know. Come on, that's awesome.
I think the only downside could be what you're saying, like the limited number of roles that he's saying that he wants to do before he retires. I'll just read the quote. I think he was talking on the Today Show or something, and he said, I'm about to play Othello at 70. After that, I'm playing Hannibal. After that, I've been talking with Steve McQueen about a film. After that, Ryan Coogler's writing a part for me in the next Black Panther. And then he said, at this point in my career, I'm only interested in working with the best. I don't know how many more films I'm going to make. It's probably not that many. I want to do things I haven't done. So,
right. And this is something he hasn't done.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been a while, and I don't know, maybe the case could be made that like it could be a little too late or something, but I'm really curious to see if the MCU can like turn things around with Fantastic Four and some of the other projects that they have coming up, because if they're able to sort of re-energize the audience in a way, the appearance of, or the return of Robert Downey Jr. to the MCU, and then the appearance of somebody like Denzel could really go a long way, I think, toward getting the MCU back to close to the levels that it was at before. I don't know if it's ever going to reach the height that it was sort of pre-pandemic, like pre-Endgame.
It can, but that's okay.
But yeah, this could be certainly a way to sort of kick it up in a very serious way.
For sure.
Okay, so, all right, let's talk about it now. The new Star Wars trilogy that is in the works from Simon Kinberg. This news came out and surprised everybody because there were no whispers, really, that this was even going to happen. But Deadline reported that Simon Kinberg has signed a deal with Lucasfilm to develop a new trilogy of films set in a galaxy far, far away. Simon Kinberg, of course, a producer who has worked on some pretty big movies, Deadpool and Wolverine this year, The Martian, Logan, things like that. He has some history with Star Wars, which I'll let you talk on because I haven't seen the Star Wars project that he worked on. But we also have to sort of foreground this conversation by saying Simon Kinberg has also worked on some pretty disastrous movies. The 2015 version of Fantastic Four being one of them, Dark Phoenix being another one. There are several movies on like under his belt that I would qualify or categorize as being pretty terrible. So this is a real mixed news type of situation here. But what do you think about this, Ryan?
So I think there's a huge difference between Simon Kinberg, the producer and writer, and Simon Kinberg, the director. Let's start off there. Look, when you're a guy who's producing as many movies as he produces, some of them are going to get away from you. Okay, so like that, you know, it's hard to pin Fantastic Four on him entirely, right? Like, we've heard so much about that movie being a mess, and can you pin that on one producer? Probably not. It is impossible to ignore Dark Phoenix, which was his feature directorial debut. It's a bad movie. Is it the worst X-Men movie? I actually don't think so, but it's bad. You know, I think the 355 is a relatively harmless action movie that he made. It was a bit of a commercial disaster, but whatever. So look, here's the deal. He is producing and writing this, as far as I understand it. There's nothing about him being in the director's chair per se. So look, it's a mixed bag for sure. Here's what I know for sure. Simon Kinberg was one of the core creative producers of Star Wars Rebels, the animated series, which was the brainchild of Dave Filoni, who everyone knows from Star Wars The Clone Wars and stuff. As I've argued before, in ink on this very website that you folks find folks read, Star Wars Rebels is some of the best Star Wars to ever Star Wars, and I mean that with all of my heart. So one of the guys behind that, putting his weight behind a movie, with Dave Filoni now being the chief creative officer at Lucasfilm, I am inclined to give that the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, that's a fair read, I think. That's maybe a slightly optimistic read. The question I have for you is, do you think this trilogy is actually going to happen?
Look, I talked a little bit about that in the article I wrote about this, but as Star Wars fans know, since The Last Jedi came out, the amount of Star Wars movies that have been announced as being in some level of development versus the amount of Star Wars that have come to fruition, you know, it's a Ryan Johnson
terrible ratio.
Ryan Johnson was supposed to make a trilogy. The David Benioff and D.B. Weiss of Game of Thrones were developing a trilogy. Patty Jenkins was supposed to make Rogue Squadron. Taika Waititi supposed to make a Star Wars movie. Kevin Feige was supposed to produce a Star Wars movie. Most of these have been confirmed to be canceled. While stuff like Taika Waititi's movie is sort of like not officially canceled, but I think Lucasfilm is just sort of hoping that people eventually stop talking about it. Like, the only one that has actually happened is Jon Favreau's The Mandalorian and Grogu, which is essentially an ultra long episode of what was supposed to be a television show. And I'm okay with that, but I'm saying that like that's the only one that has actually gone through. We also have James Mangold supposed to be directing a Dawn of the Jedi movie. There is Daisy Ridley is supposed to return for what is supposed to be a New Jedi Order movie. And Dave Filoni is developing a movie that will supposedly end the Mandalorian universe. None of these have entered production yet. So, you know, does... And the other problem here is that all of the reports about this Simon Kinberg trilogy are wildly conflicting, from it's essentially going to be episode 10 to it's not going to have anything to do with the Skywalker saga. Like, so does this take the place of the Rey movie? And like, is that the first installment of like a new Rey trilogy where she's like the Obi-Wan Kenobi of it all? Like, I don't know, maybe, like, who knows? But so yeah, like it's hard to put too much stock in something, you know, when all of these other Star Wars movies have entered development and none of them have happened. You know, but it is worth noting that the Boba Fett movie that was supposed to happen, that Josh Trank was going to direct, Simon Kinberg was the one writing that screenplay, and that never happened. But mm-hmm. you know, so he's danced with this devil before. Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, look, I'm choosing to be optimistic because I love Star Wars and I want, you know, good things for it, but I will say that my optimism does not come from nowhere. It's just that even if animated things aren't for you, that's fine. Star Wars Rebels is that good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I will say that. I'm not even the biggest Clone Wars guy. Like, I eventually watched Clone Wars. Rebels is that good. That, like, someone having their name on that project making Star Wars instantly gets me, like, in. So, you know, look, we'll see. But, yeah, your point is valid that does this happen? Who the hell knows?
Do you know if Charmaine Obaid Chinoy is still attached to direct the Daisy Ridley movie?
Well, that's the thing. Supposedly, yes. But like, okay. You know, like, but again, it's like, because I think who was writing that? I think another writer recently departed that. So like, it's like that movie seems like it's kind of, because we talked last year about Damon Lindelof supposedly, you know, directing, writing that, and then that kind of falling apart. And then I forgot who took over as the writer. But then I believe they recently departed the project somewhat quietly. So if I'm reading between the lines, to me, what it sort of sounds like is, and again, this is for anyone listening, please, this is pure speculation on my part. If I were to guess whether or not she still directs the movie, it seems like what Kinberg's thing is might involve Daisy Ridley, and that the first movie in this proposed trilogy would sort of be that first Daisy Ridley movie. Mm. And then maybe that leads to a trilogy. That would be my guess. I do not know. That's just sort of speculation. But
yeah. Was it Stephen Knight, the writer? Who
I believe that's who that was. Yes, I could not.
I know he was working on it. Yeah. Okay. Well, man, I don't really know how to weigh in here in a serious way, because I just don't have the confidence that this is going to happen, because there's no reason for me to believe that this is going to happen at this point, given what Lucasfilm has done historically. Like, I don't know. And until there are more details, until it seems more concrete than it is right now, I just kind of feel like I have to be like with my arms crossed, looking at them with my eyebrow raised and being like, oh, yeah. Okay, well, yeah. Good luck with that, and then we'll see what happens. So,
can I offer one more quick point that I think is worth?
Of course.
That okay, so many of these other things before. Now, okay, when they announced Rian Johnson's trilogy, it was before The Last Jedi came out, and I think that my understanding is that Lucasfilm believed Last Jedi was a slam dunk. They thought this is going to be, no one could have predicted what was going to happen with that, and I think that they were shocked by that. So, and then I think the David Benioff and D.B. Weiss trilogy was announced before the end of Game of Thrones happened, before, you know, so like those two were kind of like, I think that Lucasfilm learned their lesson and let's not overcommit to something. And then a lot of these other things we've heard have been individual movies that have been entering development, because I think partially because Lucasfilm doesn't really know what the future is going to be as a broader saga. So I say that to say, for them to announce an entire trilogy being in development is, to me, the core difference here, right? They're not saying he's developing a single movie, they're saying we sort of see this as a whole thing and possibly the anchor future of the franchise. I think
so you're saying that they're framing it this way to get ahead of the complaints that we heard about the sequel trilogy, which was, oh, it's too scattered. It didn't really have a sort of auteur vision.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But then I also think it's partially to say they learned their lesson in pre-announcing, like over committing to saying this trilogy is being developed, and they haven't done that for a while. And I think them saying that again now, or at least these reports coming out now, is to me a bit more of a vote of confidence in that. No, I think they think this one might actually happen, is sort of what I'm getting at. But also that like you can't do the same thing you did with the sequel trilogy, which was say whatever you will about all those movies. The Force Awakens, it is so hard to forget. Take yourself back to December 2015, January, February 2016. Every Star Wars fan on the planet pretty much was just happy. then what happens. A lot of that is because, for better or worse, they didn't necessarily have a plan or they didn't stick to a plan. I think that won't ever happen again. If they're going to make a trilogy, they're going to have a loose plan. And even if a different filmmaker comes in, they're going to stick to it. And I think that this might be them trying to do that.
All right. Well, fingers crossed. I'm just like so torn about Simon Kinberg's involvement here because, as you say, he's worked on something that's extremely beloved in Star Wars circles, but also some of his outside credits leave me a little cold, and I'm not sure my particular flavor of Star Wars fandom is super jazzed about him teaming up with Dave Filoni to do something that those two guys are really excited about, because their tastes differ from mine in pretty significant ways. But we'll see if they're able to, if they take the approach of just like sink further into the niche and be like, all right, this is the corner of, this is the style of Star Wars that we like. We're just going to do this on the big screen. Or if they try to be like, all right, let's get back to like big tent Force Awakens style Star Wars, where, like you said, the end result is seemingly everybody being mostly happy with the results. So it's an approach thing to me, not necessarily an employee type of thing with Simon Kinberg's involvement. So we'll see how it goes. But last news story I wanted to talk about real quick, and I'm not sure this is going to mean very much to you, Ryan, as somebody who doesn't really watch a lot of TV, but Hiro Murai, who is an up-and-coming director who has worked on Atlanta and Barry and Mr. and Mrs. Smith and several other things, he's like one of the most exciting TV directors in the world right now. He has announced that he's going to be working on his first feature film from A24. It's called Bushido, and it is a new samurai epic. We don't really know much about it. It's going to be a high-stakes action film set against the backdrop of feudal Japan. No cast, nothing like that yet. But just that alone, hell yes, I'm jazzed. Like, sign me up, because he's directed some incredible episodes of television. So the idea, and he also directed This Is America, the Childish Gambino music video. So, this guy knows what he's doing behind the camera, we'll put it that way. And then, so I guess before I talk about the second part of this, I was wondering if you had any reaction to this. Like, have you seen any of these projects that he's worked on? Are you aware of him as a name in the world, Ryan?
No, unfortunately, this is outside my realm of personal viewing expertise, but I will say the reaction from people was like, resounding. And it sort of reminds me of like when S.J. Clarkson finally was like allowed to direct a thing. And unfortunately, that thing ended up being Madam Web. I just hope let's hope this goes better than that, I guess, is what I'm saying. But like,
yeah, A24, certainly a more filmmaker friendly type of studio and home. So I'm guessing it's going to be a much more like kind of personal project than getting sucked up into whatever the heck was going on with like Sony's Marvel universe and all that kind of stuff. So the only other aspect of this that makes me personally very excited is that the writer of this movie is a guy named Henry Dunham, who is not a household name yet, but he wrote and directed a movie a few years ago called The Standoff at Sparrow Creek. That is an excellent thriller that
excellent
I think is just wildly
thriller.
Yeah. Oh, you've seen this. Okay, good.
Oh my God. This movie rules. No, this movie. It's one. I was thinking about it. I was like, damn, that movie was good. And I ended up looking to see if it was still streaming, and then I'm going to end up like buying it on Blu-ray. Cause it's such a good movie.
Yeah. terrific thriller, like high suspense, just like exactly what I wanted from a movie like that. And so Henry Dunham, I think that was the only movie that he's made so far. I'm pretty sure he's developing another sort of a directorial follow-up, not a sequel to the movie, but another directorial effort. But he's writing the screenplay for Hiro Murai for this movie. So the idea that the two of them are teaming up, and then also Ari Aster is going to be producing this. So I'm excited to have him on board with this thing. And so, yeah, I'm very psyched about the idea of all of these people that I like a lot teaming up to make something that sounds like it could be rad as hell. So I just wanted to put this on people's radars in case they missed that piece of news, because this to me seems like it could be one of the most exciting sort of non-blockbuster prospects that we have coming down the pipeline sometime in the next couple of years or whatever. So stay tuned for that. It's called Bushido. Just drop that on your radar, because I think it's going to be a very big deal when it comes out.
Hell yeah.
All right, Brian, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of them in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention, which is why when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.